You are listening to The Woodcutter, Book 1 in the Balance series, a Wolfsong fantasy publication, narrated by the author, Lauren Wolf. That would be me. I hope you enjoy my adventure as we begin with Chapter 1, New Hopes. The light was barely visible through the cabin window as the woodcutter wiped his eyes and sat up in bed. He leaned over, kissed his sleeping wife on the forehead, and gently got out so as not to wake her. Ivan waited as his eyes adjusted to the scant light, and after a few moments reached for his clothes. As he donned them, even the chill of the cold leather couldn't dampen his spirits or newfound resolve on this day. He walked toward the kitchen but stopped to look in on his children. They shared a room with a blanket hanging through the center to separate it. He could make out the two beds at opposite ends. In one was his son Cade, who was 14, and in the other his daughter Shyla, who was 12 years old. He could hear them breathing in the slow rhythm of slumber, and it warmed him just a little. His children and his wife Grace were the only reasons he had been able to hold on over the past months of hardship. If not for their support and encouragement, he would have had no choice but to take that coal mining job his neighbor Claude Boyle had offered him, or that ridiculously low offer he had made on his homestead. His family understood that his true love was woodcutting or working with wood, and they were always there encouraging and urging him to be true to his calling and to himself. Now that so many people had switched from wood to coal as a source of fuel, Ivan's livelihood was slowly becoming non-existent. He wasn't the only one to feel the pressure of change, though. Most of the woodcutters in the land had either gone to work in the coal mine or taken up other occupations just to survive. As he walked into the kitchen, he recalled when he was first hailed the greatest woodcutter in the land. He remembered the respect and the good feeling of providing for his family with extra left over at the end of each month. He lit a fire in the cook stove so the house would warm before his family awoke, then filled the kettle and set it on to boil. As he stoked the blaze, adding several larger pieces, he remembered the time when the representative from the Morgan's Coal Company had come by and asked if they would like to switch from wood to coal. The agent had explained how coal was more efficient, how it burned hotter, and how it was a cheaper alternative. All of what he said had been true, and Ivan was in total agreement as he escorted the gentleman from his house and off the porch. As he warned him not to step foot on his land again, he had thought, but coal doesn't have the friendly smell a wood fire offers or the cozy warmth that only a wood fire can provide. Morgan's Coal Company, owned by Sam Morgan, had been started 8 years earlier. Ivan remembered when they first broke ground because that's when Claude Boyle had moved on to the adjacent property. Claude had come to the Woodland Vale because he was joined with Maura, only child to Sam Morgan. He had been placed here as manager of the coal company by Sam as a favor to his daughter. Maura felt that if she could get Claude out of the city and away from the bad influences he had been associating with, he could get a fresh start. Hopefully this change and responsibility would help bring out in him the man she hoped he'd become. She also felt that it would be good for her boy Sonny, who was 10, to grow up in the country and learn the values of clean living. That was the story that Maura had told Grace on their first brief meeting, before Claude had forbidden them to see each other. Claude spent his time in the towns of Woodvale and Coaldale, where he drummed up new clients, made sales, and oversaw the day-to-day workings of the mine. Though he was quite intelligent when it came to business dealings, most of his days he just strutted around acting important and did much the same in the evenings at each town's inn. Ivan had heard this more than once from his clients and friends and had experienced firsthand some of the shady maneuvering Claude had pulled off just to try to undermine him. This dislike or even hatred that he felt for Ivan was something the woodcutter had never been able to understand. He had always been respectful of Claude, but for some reason, which his wife had tried to explain to him was jealousy, he just didn't like Ivan. Of course, Ivan couldn't imagine, with all that Claude had, how he could ever be jealous of a poor woodcutter. The fire, now burning strongly, crackled its approval as the woodcutter headed for the door. He grabbed the water bucket from the counter, walked over and pulled his boots on, then stepped out onto the porch. He stood there for a moment, then looked around for his old hound dog, Rufus. He must be off chasing something, he thought, or digging a hole somewhere to bury a great find. Rufus, a dark red mountain hound, had been a gift from the Catchers to Cade when he was born, but was clearly Shyla's dog and was always by her side. Ivan took a deep breath. The air was pure and brisk. He loved mornings, the taste on the breeze and the way it smelled after an evening rain, and had always thought of it as a new beginning. Anything could happen today, and Ivan knew that he had a big decision to make. This decision had been weighing on him for some time, and there would be no more putting it off. This summer he would have to make the choice between remaining a woodcutter or becoming a coal miner. He shuddered at the prospect, but had given himself 5 months to find enough work to enable him to continue doing what he loved. All he needed now were a couple more woodcutting contracts, like the one he would be delivering this morning, and he would have enough coins to take him well into the winter. Ivan stepped off the porch, carrying his 6-foot, 40-year-old frame with ease. He was lean and well-muscled, but not too bulky. He had dark, tan skin resulting from decades of working in the hot sun, and his chestnut hair, badly in need of a cut, framed a chiseled face as his dark eyes took in their surroundings. The light in the morning sky had brightened as he walked along the path that led the 200 yards south to the creek, and Ivan could hear the sounds of the woodland's early risers. To the left of the path, he could see lush grass and spring flowers blooming in a collage of bright colors, and to the right, he saw the 5-rail fence that surrounded his neighbor's estate. He looked back at his log house, which was situated perfectly in the 5-acre meadow. He kept it up as much as his woodworking skills would allow, and though it was badly in need of some new windows, it was home. As he continued along the path, Ivan studied the trees that covered the south end of his property. This land had been handed down for generations, and each one of the men in his family had known and practiced the art of woodcutting. Although his father had worked primarily as a stonemason, the land and the craft had been passed to Ivan by his grandfather. The woodcutter had learned all he could from this wise woodsman and felt honored to be a part of that heritage. He took a closer look at the trees and could tell that some of the mature stands were hundreds of years old, providing homes and shelter to the creatures of the woods, while the newer trees and saplings fought for light and space on the forest floor. Ivan cut and carved wood for a living, but had a deep understanding and respect for its existence. He only harvested the prime trees and left the mature and newer ones as a balance. He also lived by a code that you should never harvest trees or hunt near your home. As a result, he only hunted and did most of his cutting to the north, in and around the big timber area. He had also cut to the south in the Whispering Forest, though not as of late. This extra traveling took more effort and organization, but it kept Ivan's little 30-acre sanctuary untouched. As he made his way toward the creek, he marveled at his neighbor's property. From the huge manor, which could easily fit 20 of Ivan's houses inside it, to the stables and outbuildings, it was all in perfect order. He could see that the spring plowing was almost finished and ready for the new seed, with the smell of the freshly turned soil filling the air. He admired the huge trees all standing stately in rows up and down the graveled carriage path, and the blacksmith building towering in its 3-story splendor. If he remembered correctly, Claude even had his own blacksmith and many hired hands to work his place, but even with all his impressive wealth, Ivan could not respect his ways. He had seen how he treated others, including himself, and in a way he felt sorry for him. "I don't see how anyone can treat people in such a manner," thought Ivan. "Claude must be very miserable inside to have the capacity to inflict such cruelty upon others." He took another long gaze at his neighbor's magnificent property and wondered again how Claude could ever be jealous of him. He resumed his walk and within a short while was coming up on the opening that led to the north shore of the Horseshoe Creek, and beyond that, the boundary of the Whispering Forest. Many believed the creek got its name because it wound through the vale so much that it looked like a line of horseshoes strung tip to tip. Ivan believed that if you drank the water from its cool bed, it would bring you luck, but after the last few years, he was starting to believe the winding theory. As he moved closer, he could see that a thin mist had blanketed the water, and on the other side saw movement of some sort. He stopped, set down his bucket, and knelt, focusing on the far shore. He could discern 3 different shapes, and with a little more effort, could see the outlines of a doe deer and her 2 fawns. These early morning movers were visiting the creek before the start of a hot spring day. He grabbed his bucket and crept in to get a closer look. He watched the 2 fawns nuzzle the liquid as the mother kept watch for any danger. The wind was blowing gently toward him, so the doe couldn't detect his scent. He remained still as he watched the fawns lose interest and the cautious mother start to sip. Even as she drank, she kept an eye out for danger and was instinctively aware of her fawn's whereabouts. As she finished, Ivan reached out and picked up a small twig from off the ground. He broke it slowly between his fingers and watched the animal. Almost as soon as the twig had snapped, the doe bounded in front of her babies and chased them back into the dark forest. The woodcutter was amazed at the keen hearing the doe possessed and the protective instincts she had for her offspring, and just for a moment it reminded him of his wife. It's funny, he thought, what a common thread there is throughout all the balance. Ivan got up, grabbed his bucket, and walked to the water's edge. The sky was brighter now, and the mist had almost vanished. This allowed him a panoramic view of the Whispering Forest. This ancient behemoth appeared almost formidable as it loomed in seeming watch over its perimeter. It had gotten its name from the many visitors that had wandered to the east and swore they heard its windswept voices warning them away. The wagon path leading into it on the far side, almost invisible to the untrained eye, led to the trade road that made its way through the forest from Woodvale to the Gatu Plains. It was said that if you stayed to that road, the forest ignored or dismissed your presence, but those who strayed from it had returned somehow changed, or not returned at all. Ivan dipped his bucket into the icy water as he listened to the forest sounds. He remembered his few trips into that place, and the last one in particular, which he didn't want to think about. When you entered, it always felt like you were being watched, and made the hairs on the back of your neck raise. Ivan had gone into that forest and taken wood from it, and although he hadn't heard any voices, he always felt uneasy until he had safely reached the outer edge. After his most recent trip in, he had never returned, and was now cutting all of his wood up north. He filled his bucket and set it on the bank, then leaned down and put his lips to the water, sucking in the cool liquid. As he drank, he saw a school of minnows darting around in the shallows. Spring is such a gift, he thought, a gift of new beginnings and new hope. With that in mind, the ever-present feeling of despair seemed to dissipate, and his step felt lighter as he lifted his bucket and headed back up the path toward his cabin. Ivan whistled a tune as he walked and went over the plan he had been working on. He was saving up as much as he could for the yearly event that got him through the winter months, the woodcutting competition. This competition was held each summer, and the amount he would make from his delivery today, along with what he had tucked away, would cover the entry fee of 5 silver coins. Ivan had won first place in this competition each season since it had been started over 20 years ago. The Baron Beryl Salde, a longtime friend to the woodcutter, was a true lover of wood and its craft and the founder and host of this event. It was a winner-take-all contest, and the prize was usually around 4 gold coins. Those winnings, along with his woodcutting earnings, had kept them going over the past few years. Now, because of the scarcity of jobs, and even with the gold from the contest, they still had to scrimp and stretch every copper just to make it from month to month. He had to smile when he thought about how that competition had become so extravagant. The Baron brought in entertainers and artists and invited anyone with merchandise or foodstuffs to set up a booth and sell their wares. It was a great festival and a chance for Ivan to feel recognized for his talents in the ways of wood, and that recognition had become all too rare these days. The funny part was that even though Ivan was feeling unappreciated, he was still a legend throughout the land, and the people told stories of his woodcutting feats. This may have been one reason for Claude's dislike of him, and another may have been the fact that Claude's boy Sonny also saw Ivan as a legend. Yeah, a legend, he chuckled to himself. A legend that no one wants to hire. He had almost reached his house when he heard the sound of horses' hooves. He looked across the fence and saw his neighbor with his boy Sonny in a brand new double horse-drawn carriage hurrying away from his home toward the public road. Sonny saw Ivan and lifted his arm to wave, but his father quickly grabbed it and jerked it down roughly as he whipped his horses into a frenzied pace. Yeah! Ivan gave a futile wave and stepped onto his porch. That's strange, he thought. Claude doesn't usually leave until well after first light. He must have some urgent business in Woodvale or at the mine. As he walked toward the door, he could smell blueberry pancakes and knew that his love was already busy in the kitchen. He could also smell the smoke from the cook stove. He loved that smell, and a deep sadness crept over him at the thought that one day it might be completely replaced by that stinky, sooty coal. He was reaching for the door as it flew open, and out ran his daughter, carrying an empty basket. He steadied the water bucket in his left hand, then reached down with his right and swept his little girl up, holding her tightly. Ivan looked down at Shyla as she squirmed to free herself. How pretty she was with her mother's bright green eyes and graceful movement. She had her grandmother's raven blue-black hair, except hers was wild and wavy, and her fine features accentuated pouting lips. "Where are you off to in such a rush?" asked the woodcutter as he squeezed her.
"I'm going to gather eggs for breakfast, Daddy,"
she squealed with glee.
"I'm not Daddy," he growled. "I'm the porch troll, and you will not be freed until you reveal the password."
"You're not a troll, you're my Daddy,"
she chided. The woodcutter squeezed her tighter and said,
"I am the evil troll, and if you don't know the password, then I must take you to my cave beneath the porch and have you for my breakfast."
Shyla's face became very serious, and she looked into her father's eyes and said,
"Aw, yes, I can see now that you are the porch troll, but I will not be joining you for breakfast this fine day. The password is Horseshoe Creek,"
she bellowed in her lowest, biggest voice. Ivan fell to his knees and released his daughter, but not before kissing her cheek.
"Foiled again,"
he cried,
"but one day I will get you, fair princess."
"Not today,"
she giggled and leapt off the porch, running toward the chicken pen. "That girl is wise beyond her years," thought Ivan as he stepped inside and closed the door. He walked to the counter and set the bucket down, then noticed that some of the water had gone missing during his dealings with the princess. He reached for the dipper that hung on the nail just above and took a drink to smooth away his troll voice. He could see the sunlight streaming through the kitchen window, silhouetting his wife as she mixed a few more preserved blueberries into the pancake batter. She looked elegant with her auburn hair flowing down the length of her back and her petite 5'4" physique, lithe yet muscled in perfect proportion, accented by a tiny waist. She was strikingly beautiful with her deep green eyes, rosy lips, and flawless ivory skin, and it was hard to believe that at 36 she looked like she was still in her 20s. Ivan came up behind her, slid his hands around her waist, and held her close. He kissed her neck and whispered, "What a vision you are, and what a fine woman." She turned and faced him, wrapping her arms around his neck, and replied,
"Well, if I am a fine woman, it's only because you are a true man, my love."
And they stood there holding each other for a few magical moments. It didn't last long, though, as the door flew open and Shyla came in with her basket of eggs. She carried them to the counter, washed them in the basin, and set them on the cupboard.
"Can I flip the pancakes?"
she asked.
"Sure,"
replied Grace,
"but not until the bubbles pop." "I know, Mother,"
she answered in a frustrated voice.
"You taught me that when I was 7.
Grace looked at her daughter, thinking,
"She is growing up so fast, I often forget she is probably a better cook than I am."
She glanced at the 10 eggs in the bowl and sighed. They used to have 50 chickens, but with the difficulties over the past years, they were down to 11. Well, at least 10 were still laying, and the brood hen was setting on 8 more that hopefully would all become chicks within the next 2 weeks.
"How is the brood hen and her eggs?"
asked Grace.
"She is doing well,"
replied Shyla as she flipped another pancake.
"She is worried about her eggs and is very protective of them."
Grace looked at her daughter in wonder.
"Some days I swear that child can speak with the animals,"
she said quietly to her husband.
"Since she was old enough to talk, she has been telling me that this animal wants that, and that animal feels a certain way."
At first it had seemed strange, but now it was almost normal. "Where is Cade?" asked Ivan as he moved to his favorite chair.
"He's outside loading the last of the wood for your delivery today,"
replied Grace.
"He is his father's son, and your approval means so much."
Ivan thought for a moment and said, "I'll take him with me today. I'd say he's old enough to learn about the business side of woodcutting. You can only learn so much from school books, and he is coming into his manhood. Why, he will be 15 soon. Can you believe it, Grace?" She just smiled and turned the last of their bacon over in the frying pan as Cade walked through the door carrying a towering armload of wood. He was a handsome boy with blue eyes and black hair like his grandfather on his mother's side. He had grown 3 inches this past winter, and at 5'7", he was very happy to finally be taller than his mother. He had waited for what seemed like forever to reach that goal, but his sights were set on 6 feet, like his father. At 14 years old, his build was wiry and a bit gangly, though unusually strong for his age, and at his rate of growth would fill out and possibly surpass his father before he was finished. He dropped his load into the wood box and walked over to his father, who had just sat down. The armload had looked effortless for him to carry and reminded the woodcutter just how unusual his son's strength was. Earlier that spring, Ivan and Cade had been working in the forest when the wagon lost a wheel. The woodcutter had tried to lift it and reattach the wheel, but could only move it a few inches. While he was looking for a long pole for leverage, Cade hoisted the wagon up and held it there long enough for Ivan to slide the wheel back on. This was no ordinary strength his son possessed, and made the woodcutter wonder where it had come from. Ivan watched him and leaned back in the chair he had built with his own hands. When he thought about it, he realized he had crafted it even before he had been joined with Grace 16 years ago. "I finished loading the wagon and filled the wood box," said Cade as he stopped in front of his dad and waited. "Well, son, you've earned your breakfast today, haven't you?" replied Ivan. Looking disappointed, Cade turned and walked to the washstand. "You've been working hard lately," observed Ivan. "Doing the job of a man, I'd say." Cade listened as he washed his hands and face, adding more hot water from the kettle. Ivan paused for just a moment and then continued. "I'd say you're ready to come on the delivery and into Woodvale with me. What do you think?" Cade dried his hands and face and tried hard to contain his excitement. "Well," he admitted, "I have completed all the work from my lesson books and passed the last exams. I think it would be good for me to become more familiar with some of the ways of the trade." Cade walked to the door and called back, "Just need a few more pieces of wood to fill the box. I just noticed." As soon as he was outside, the whole family could hear him jumping and yelling, "Yes! Yes! Yes!" which caused everyone to roar with laughter. Ivan stood up, leaned over, and grabbed the guitar that hung on the wall beside his chair. He sat back down, placed it over his knee, and strummed a chord. Grace was pouring bacon grease from the big frying pan into the smaller one in preparation for frying eggs. Shiloh was setting the table in between spooning pancake batter onto the hot skillet and flipping it at the precise moment. Ivan strummed another chord and looked at the old guitar. It had been traded to him by the gypsies. About 2 years back, they had stopped on his property and asked if he could fix a couple of their unique wagons. They had asked around and he had been recommended to them by some of his neighbors. The gypsies traveled in a caravan of about 30 or so wagons and wandered from town to town peddling their trinkets, telling fortunes, and selling elixirs and potions that were supposed to cure almost anything. They were great entertainers and storytellers, and the music they made wove a combination of bliss and sorrow. Ivan had agreed to do the work, crafting 2 new wheels and some floorboards, but the method of payment had been an interesting negotiation. After the bargaining was finished, they had settled on an old guitar along with a few lessons. Ivan had always wanted to learn the instrument, as well as 1 silver and 3 coppers. Grace had also asked for some bottles full of strange colored liquids from the old gypsy woman with the blind eye. She said she needed them for her healing practice, so Ivan had agreed even though he had no idea what they contained. Like her mother and her mother's mother, Grace was a healer. The art of healing had been passed down in her family for countless generations, and as her mother had taught her, so was she teaching Shiloh. Healers used remedies and mixtures to ward off sickness, and the ones who possessed the gift also used the force that emanated from within the land to aid them. Only 1 out of every 100 healers was gifted in the magic of the land, and as a result, they were sought out above all others. Grace, who was blessed with this gift, had been administering aid and healing those in the surrounding areas since she had come to live with Ivan all those years ago. Before that, she had lived with her mother in their mountain home in the south. Grace's father Hawkins, who had captained a ship in the King's Navy, had mysteriously disappeared when she was 10, and she and her mother had left Southport soon after to live in the mountains to the north. In fact, she had been awakened in the middle of the night by her mother, and they had packed up whatever they could carry and left before the next morning. Ivan had asked Grace what had happened to her father, but she wasn't sure. Her mother had never told her the details, but she had learned that it had to do with a seer and an important foretelling that involved the family. It had all sounded strange and complicated, so Ivan had never mentioned it again. The woodcutter kept strumming his guitar as he fell ever deeper into thought and found himself remembering the first day he had seen Grace.